praise His holy name, to approach His throne, to remember His Son, to look into His Word together now for a time. Thank you for being here. If you're visiting with us, thank you for caring enough to come and glorify our God with us today. Flowing through us, He can use us every day and every hour. Those are the words that we just sang. And I believe them to be true. I believe that God can use His people if they have prepared themselves, if they offer themselves willingly to Him. I believe that He can use us every moment of our lives. And that it is our duty, in fact our privilege, and the very purpose for which we were created, to put ourselves in His hand and allow Him to use us as His tools for His glory. We sometimes hear people complain that one of their friends or co-workers or somebody at school is just using them. You ever hear that? He's just using me. Maybe they say that because, well, here's somebody who claims to be a friend, but he's always borrowing things, or he's always asking for favors, and he's seldom showing concern for you, and so you feel like you're being used. Perhaps someone treats you nice and says good things about you. He shows an interest in you, but he's just doing that to sell you something. So again, you're feeling used. Maybe he just wants to gain access to your friends or to your social group or whatever it might be. So you hear that phrase pretty frequently, often, I think. That person's just using me. We think about that in a negative connotation. It's not something that we like. It's not a good feeling when someone's just using us. But God, when He is just using us, He is doing with us what He created us for. We are instruments of His. We are tools in His hands to accomplish His will in this world. And no matter how ordinary we may be, that's what we're created for. David of old was just a shepherd boy, but God used him to slay a giant who terrified the warriors of Israel. Four fishermen were used by Jesus to bring a boatload of souls to salvation. A widow, an ordinary person, a poor person, with only two mites to her name, was used to teach one of the greatest lessons on giving that's ever been taught. A woman at a well, a sinner, was used to bring a whole town to Jesus. So many examples in the New Testament and the Old Testament as well of people that God used, ordinary people, people with less than great talent, let's say, less than great ability, God used. I was awake in Africa in the night, one night last week, thinking about the work that we were doing and praying that God would continue to use us. Sometimes, even on a trip like that where so much that you're doing is planned out work for the Lord, so many things that you encounter have directly to do with His will being done upon this earth. Sometimes you lose yourself in the work and forget why you're doing it. And I remember last week in the middle of the night thinking again to pray to God that He would just use us and that His will would be done through us. We lose sight of that in our lives as Christians. We lose sight, I think, of our very purpose. And we get busy doing things, but we forget the One in whose hand we live. The Lord used Gideon in the Old Testament. And I want to think about that story with you for just a few moments, because Gideon reminds me of me and a lot of us, really. He was, as I like to say, an unwilling victim. He didn't really want to be God's tool. He really didn't want to do what God called him to do. He didn't think that he could, in fact. And so we go back to Judges chapter 6, and we pick up the reading in verse 11, in a time when, during the period of the judges, again, God's people have sinned, and as the cycle went, God brought the neighboring nations against them and oppressed them. And so Gideon is living during one of those down times in the cycle. And an angel of the Lord came and sat under the terebinth tree, which was at Ophrah, which belonged to Joash the Abiezrite, while his son Gideon threshed wheat in the winepress in order to hide it from the Midianites. And so here is a man, he's threshing wheat to get the grain, and he's doing it to hide it from the Midianites, who had again overrun the people of Israel and were oppressing them and just taking their things. I mean, you talk about somebody taking your lunch money. The Midianites had come in, and they weren't just taking the lunch money. They were taking the lunch and the supper and everything else that Israel had. They were despoiling their lands. And here Gideon is just trying to get a little food to eat, and he's hiding out in this press, and he is just trying to get something to eat. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him and said, "The Lord is with you, you mighty man of valor." And Gideon said to him, "Oh my Lord, if the Lord is with us, why then has all this happened to us? Where are all his miracles which our fathers told us about, saying, 'Did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt?' But now the Lord has forsaken and delivered us into the hands of the Midianites." Gideon was going to be called to be used by God in an extraordinary way. But he was full of doubts and questions. We look at our lives, we see the negative things that are happening. We see how Satan has made inroads and hurt us, caused us to stumble and hurt family members and made things more difficult for us, as is the way of Satan. And God would use us, and we would say to God, as Gideon did, "God, if you want to use me, why is all of this happening to me? Why do I have all of this trouble in my family? Why do I have so many health problems? Why do I have so many financial problems? Why do I have so many interpersonal problems? Why do I feel depressed? Why am I not happy all the time? If you're going to use me, why has all this happened to me, God? Why?" And it is the wrong question to ask, because it matters not what has happened to you or what is happening to you. God can use you still. In verse 14, the text says, "The Lord turned to him and said, 'Go in this might of yours, and you shall save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have I not sent you? I'm going to use you, Gideon. I have a purpose for you. I have something I want you to do.' So he said to him, 'Oh my Lord, how can I save Israel? Indeed, my clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my father's house.'" Gideon has no self-confidence. He's a nobody. He has no particular leadership ability, he thinks. He has no particular talent that would lead him to even begin to think that he could deliver God's people from the Midianites. His family was the least in all of Israel, and he was the least in his family. What excuses do we have? "Well, I wasn't born into some great family in the church. I wasn't born into some family with big financial resources and educational opportunities and Maybe that's your excuse. Maybe it's mine. Maybe my daddy was a janitor. In fact, he was. God doesn't care about that. It's not important. It didn't matter to God where Gideon came from, what his family was, how great he was, how much talent he had, his status in Israel. It's entirely inconsequential to the God of heaven. God worked with him. God worked with Gideon, the one who was least in his father's house, making small steps of faith. God allowed Gideon to grow in his faith, to test the truth of the revelation that he was being given. He was to bring a small sacrifice, a goat and some unleavened bread, and he brought it and he set it on a rock, and the angel touched it, and whew, it went up in flame, and the angel disappeared. And Gideon began to realize, hey, there may be something to this. And Gideon was told to tear down the altar of Baal that was there in the city and to take the wood of the image and to use it for fire to make a sacrifice to God. He did it, but he did it at night because he was afraid. He was afraid of the men of the city, and I think even of his own father. Gideon still wasn't sure. If you really want me to do this, God, let me check something out here. I'm going to get a fleece, and I'm going to put it out overnight. And if it's wet tomorrow and the ground around it is dry, then I'll know you really want me to do this. And so sure enough, that's how it was. And so Gideon said, okay, well, that worked. Let me try something else. If I'm going to put it out tonight, and if it's dry and the ground around it is wet, then I'll know for sure. So all of these steps of faith, seeing if God was indeed with him, and God ever was. And so we come to Judges chapter 7. And Gideon and all the people that were with him arose and encamped beside the well of Harod. So the camp of the Midianites was on the north side of them by the hill of Moreh in the valley. Gideon is going to be useful when he's fat. And I don't mean physically fat. I mean when he's faithful and when he's available and when he's teachable. The Israelites gather at about the vantage point where I took the picture that's on the bottom of the screen, right by the well of Herod. And you can look across the Jezreel Valley. And what you see in the distance in the Jezreel Valley is the hill of Moreh. You can see it in the distance there. And the Midianites were like locusts in the valley surrounding that hill. And Gideon calls all of Israel to come and gather against the Midianites. And 32,000 men show up. And we know the story. God says, I don't need 32,000 men. Tell them, if you're afraid, go home. And 22,000 men go home. And God said, I still don't need 10,000 men. Take them down to the spring here and have them lap the water. And 300 that bring it to their mouths, I'll use them. Gideon learned to be faithful. He's not thinking about the difficulty of what God is asking him to do. He's thinking about doing what God asked him to do, believing in God, no matter how difficult it may seem. You see the difference? Now, he becomes a faithful servant. Now he becomes one not always asking questions. Are you faithful to what God says, even when you're afraid or confused? Even when you don't understand why it needs to be done? Even when you can't comprehend accomplishing something that's so difficult? In Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 6, one of the modern speech paraphrases reads this way: you can never please God without faith, without depending on Him. We can never please God without faith, without trusting that His way is right. Standard translations say, without faith, it is impossible to please Him. For he that comes to God must believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of those that diligently seek after Him. Gideon became a man of faith. He made himself available to God. Ability is never the issue when it comes to being used by God. Availability is. Your ability doesn't mean anything to God. He doesn't need your ability. He's got all the ability. It doesn't matter if you can't do it. He can do it. Is your life available to God? Could God use you? Or are you too busy doing your own thing that you're rarely in a place where God can put you to work? The prophet Isaiah, in Isaiah chapter 6 and verse 8, heard the voice of the Lord saying, "Whom shall I send, and who will go for us?" And he said, "Here am I, send me." Making himself available to be used by God for whatever the purpose might be. "Here am I, send me." You know what Isaiah was doing? You remember, right? What he was doing when he said that? And I realize there's revelation going on there. There's a vision that's happening there as well. But what Isaiah was really doing was, in this context, he was in God's presence worshiping God. It's really hard to be used by God if we don't even bother to come into His presence as an assembly of His people and worship Him and focus on His will and focus on His work. We don't make ourselves available very well for Him. Gideon was faithful and he was available and he was teachable. He had to learn a lot. He had to learn to do things God's way, even when God's way seemed nonsensical. What do you mean, take 300 guys and with a lantern and a stick and a loud voice? You break a pot and you shout out, "The sword of the Lord and of Gideon." And 300 men rout thousands upon thousands of Midianites lying in the valley. It wasn't man's way. It didn't make any sense. It didn't matter. It was God's way. And even today, as we look about how the work of the church is to be done, you know, men are scheming to come up with better ideas, different programs. Here's what we... How about this? How about let's follow what God said to do? How about doing it His way when it comes to the work, the organization, the focus of the church? How about trusting Him instead of our own thoughts and schemes? Are we teachable? Will we listen to God when He tells us, "This is what I want done"? And you might say, "I have a better way to do that, God." God says, "I don't care about your better way. Just do it my way. It'll work." So it comes to us. The Lord can use you if you're fat, if you're faithful. Think about what's said really in Ephesians chapter 2. Well-known passage, of course. But in verse 8, "By grace you have been saved through faith. It is faith that brings us into relationship with God. By grace you have been saved through faith. It's not of works, lest anyone should boast. You don't earn your salvation. You come upon it through grace. And because you have that relationship and you're in Christ, you are His workmanship, verse 10, created in Christ Jesus for good works. It is faith that produces the works. We are saved through faith to good works. It is by faith that Gideon did what he did. It is by faith that the walls of Jericho were circled. It is by faith that Abraham offered up Isaac. It is by faith that Noah built the ark. It is by faith. You get the idea? It is faith that works. And unless we're full of faith, we're not ready to be a tool of God. The Lord can use you if you're faithful. The Lord can use you if you'll make yourself available. Presenting yourself to the Lord as a righteous, holy instrument, cleansed and ready to be used in His service. Romans 6 and verse 13 says this, "Do not present your members as instruments of unrighteousness to sin, but present yourselves to God. God, here I am, use me." Present yourselves to God. Present yourselves to God as being alive from the dead and your members as instruments of righteousness to God. A prayer that is sometimes attributed to Francis of Assisi, he did not write it, but nonetheless it's attributed to him. Lord, make me an instrument of Thy peace. Lord, make me an instrument. Make me an instrument. However you want me to be used, whatever you want me to do, just make me an instrument that you can use. In 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 21, a passage that relates to one of the songs we sang this morning, Channels Only. The Apostle Paul writes to Timothy, "If anyone cleanses himself from the latter, that is, the things of the world, he will be a vessel of honor, sanctified and useful for the Master, prepared for every good work." To be used by God, we have to be clean. To be used by God, we have to be sanctified, holy, set apart. God doesn't use dirty instruments to clean people's souls with. He is the great physician. He can do amazing things. But He'll only use clean instruments. If you have sin in your life, if you're continuing to live in the filth of this world, you cannot expect God to use you that way. You are not available to be used by God. It would be like going into an operating room, you know, and the surgeon's just performed this surgery and there's blood and guts and everything all over the place, and his instruments are filthy dirty after all of this, and he says, "Okay, roll the next one in here, we're using the same instruments." I don't think so. God needs clean instruments. He'll only use clean instruments. We need to be teachable in His ways, faithful, available, and teachable. It is Psalm 119, I think in the sheet that you have, I may have the verses backwards, but Psalm 119, verse 35, 33 through 35 says, "Teach me, O Lord, the way of your statutes. Teach me your way, and I shall keep it to the end. Give me understanding, I shall keep your law." It's not my way, it's your way that I need to know, that I need to follow. "Make me walk the path of your commandments," he says. And back in Psalm 86 and verse 11, "Teach me your way, O Lord, and I will walk in your truth." Obedience to the will of God and compliance with His ways enable us to be used by Him. Paul will write to the Philippians in Philippians chapter 2 and verse 12, "Therefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, in not as my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who works in you both to will and to do for His good pleasure." Think about an instrument that you might use. A broom to sweep the house. An axe to chop a tree. A key to open a door. So many instruments, so many tools that we use every day. You are the operator of the instrument, aren't you? God is the operator of you. If you are in His hand, you must do it His way. Should never be a thought of, this isn't my way, God. You're His instrument. And so this morning, are you willing to be used for God's glory, not your own? Whatever God may do with us, it is for His glory and not ours. I mentioned that my dad was a janitor. I think I've mentioned that before here. I worked with him for several years. In fact, my whole time through high school, I worked with him at least during the summer, sometimes during the school year as well. We used all kinds of different instruments. I remember stripping the wax off the floors and re-waxing the floors and polishing those with the big buffers, you know. I remember cleaning those restrooms to, you know, you could almost eat off the floor in the elementary school where he worked one summer, painting the walls. Nobody ever came into that school and said to my dad, "Wow, Klein, you must have a super mop. Wow, what an amazing paintbrush you have." Nobody ever did that. People came into my dad's school and said, "This place is spick and span. You must have a really great janitor here." The instruments didn't matter. The one who used them, He's the one who matters. To the arrogant king of Assyria, the Lord asked in Isaiah 10 and verse 15, "Shall the axe boast itself against him who chops with it? Is it the axe that gets the glory? Look what I did," says the axe. No, the axe doesn't boast against the one who chops with it. "Or shall the saw exalt himself against he who saws with it? As if a rod could wield itself against those who lift it up, or as if a staff could lift up, as it were, not wood." Instruments are just instruments. The glory goes to those who wield them. Paul will say, it's not he who plants or he who waters who is anything, but God who gives the increase. If you think you're not capable, that's good, because you're not. God doesn't need those who are capable. He needs those who have faith, those who are available, and those who are teachable. That's who He'll use every time. The Apostle Paul writes in 2 Corinthians chapter 3 and verses 4 and 5, "We have such trust through Christ toward God." We trust Him. That's the thing. We trust Him. We are not sufficient to do the things we're called upon to do, but He is. He goes on to say, "Not that we are sufficient of ourselves to think of anything as being from ourselves, but our sufficiency is from God." And so as you sit here this morning, maybe wondering, well, where is all this going and how does this apply to me? Don't you see? Are you being used? Why are you here this morning? Why are you a part of the Lord's church? If you don't see your purpose in this life as being an instrument of God for His glory, you have missed the point of living. What are you doing? How are you letting God use you right now, today? Maybe somebody here this morning has never put their life into the hand of God. Please trust Him. Please make yourself available to Him. Please let Him teach you His ways. Make that commitment right now. Even obey the gospel. While together we stand, while we sing.